You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Hello, and welcome to this podcast, addressing the need for novel therapies for post-COVID conditions, enhancing understanding, diagnosis, assessment, management, and research. In this episode, we discuss strategies to address health disparities in patients with post-COVID conditions. My name is Deb Gordon, and I'm thrilled to host today's podcast. I'm joined by Dr. David Petrino, Director of Rehabilitation Innovation at Mount Sinai Health System in New York City, and Professor of Rehabilitation and Human Performance at the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai. Welcome, Dr. Petrino.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, why don't we start with an explanation of long COVID? Because my understanding is it's been a process to come to what to call it, let alone how to define it.
Yeah, you know, and I think it's still an ongoing consideration about how narrow or how broad we get with our definitions. But for right now, while we're still learning as much as we can about the condition, we define long COVID as anybody who has had an acute COVID infection and at about the 3-month mark after their initial acute COVID infection, they're still struggling to recover to their pre-COVID baseline. Anyone who fits that criteria, we consider to have long COVID.
How prevalent is it? What do we know about the epidemiology right now?
So, you know, the epidemiology is always a bit of a moving target in an emerging condition, but what we can do is look at some of the latest review papers that are out there, and the most recent review paper placed your risk of going on to develop long COVID if you're healthy, fully vaccinated, and sustaining an acute infection of COVID-19 in, you know, 2023, your chances of developing long COVID sit at around 8-12%.
We know that COVID disproportionately affected people of color as well as socioeconomically disadvantaged people. Can you talk a bit about that and why that was and still is?
Yeah, you know, I think that there were a lot of reasons for people who are members of historically excluded groups in healthcare to be more hard hit by acute COVID. And, you know, in general, it tends to, you know, it tends to focus on the idea that folks who are living in, you know, living in a low socioeconomic status are typically still showing up to work. They're working what we call essential jobs at supermarkets and in service industry during the pandemic. So they were not able to take the protections that other people were able to take. Typically, these individuals are living in a higher population density situation. So there's more people living in a household or there's more people sharing a square foot of space, especially in cities like New York. And so as a result, infection is likely to spread through a community much faster. And then, of course, access to testing wasn't as prevalent. So individuals may have felt under the weather, but you know, weren't able to access a COVID test, so more likely to spread the tests across their community. And similarly, access to clean air, access to masks, access to other infection prevention measures reached these communities the last. And so as a result, you know, infection is far more prevalent.
So that brings me to some fairly recent data, government data showing that Black and Hispanic individuals, as well as those with family incomes 200 to 399% of the federal poverty level, are more likely to have long COVID. Can you discuss these numbers and their implications?
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things that we've said just from the very beginning has been the only way to prevent getting long COVID is to prevent yourself from getting COVID. It really seems to be as simple as that. Every infection carries with it a risk of going on to develop long COVID. And so communities that are getting hit repeatedly in different surges of acute COVID, the numbers are just going to be higher. There's no doubt about it. There may be other factors that also predispose individuals to go on to develop long COVID. We're still learning about that. But for right now, it makes the most sense from a public health standpoint to keep it simple and say avoiding acute infection is the best way to avoid going on to develop long COVID. So unfortunately, given what we just discussed, it should be no surprise that these communities are really struggling now with inflated long COVID numbers, and it's really disastrous. You know, we know what long COVID does to people from from a quality of life and a health standpoint all too well, but we also know that it affects people's abilities to maintain a living, to go to work and show up to work every day. We also know that it affects people's ability to engage in extracurricular activities that may give themselves more opportunities to either get a new job or, you know, engage in education that can get them a better job or, any of these things. And with long COVID, those opportunities go away very, very quickly. And we're really concerned about people living in poverty already falling further into poverty as a result of long COVID.
That's kind of scary. Long COVID then, particularly in these populations, could have an effect on not just their health, but their how they live and income, and then that could have a broader community effect. Can you briefly discuss what that might look like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we had legislation put in place by the Biden administration to say that long COVID is recognized as a disability under the ADA, but we have not seen any sensible or real world legislation put in place to actually enforce that. So what that means is it's very, very easy for employers to discriminate against workers with long COVID. It's very, very easy for insurers to deny access to care for individuals with long COVID without any recourse, legal recourse whatsoever. People are being denied short and long-term disability by the Social Security Administration. And this is a huge issue. And what it means is that for people who are wealthy enough to sustain something like this, or are wealthy enough to hire a lawyer and actually fight situations like this, they can manage. You know, it's not pleasant. No, long COVID is not easy for any member of the population, but these individuals can manage. For individuals who cannot afford to not show up to work every day, or cannot afford to hire a lawyer, a disability lawyer, to fight the fact that the Social Security Administration is not providing adequate accommodations for their disability, these individuals slip further and further into poverty. I think we often need to be reminded that folks who are living at the poverty line or below the federal poverty line, often these are folks that our economy relies upon to maintain stability. So if a large portion of our workforce is suddenly is suddenly falling under because of the burden of long COVID, that is a crisis for our national identity, our ability to function as a country. And we've had multiple noted economists around the world talking about this effect. We had a publication from the Brookings Institute talking about the effect of long COVID on the American economy. We've had economists from Harvard talking about a $3.5 trillion problem with long COVID affecting the U.S. economy. We should be expecting this long COVID crisis to have very far-reaching effects on the economy.
Wow, that's fascinating and frightening. I'm going to bring it back to the clinical somewhat. I read one study and it's mixed evidence with other studies that symptoms of long COVID may differ between people of color and whites?
You know, there's a lot that we need to really pull apart when it comes to trying to make strong statements about how different people with long COVID present. And, you know, one of the things that I think we can talk about quite a bit is the fact that there are differences in symptom presentation based on gender. There are also differences in symptom presentation based on initial acute severity of your COVID infection. So there are folks who will have a different presentation of their long COVID as a result of the fact that they were hospitalized with their acute COVID infection. And that led to a number of, very clear physiological damage, damages in different organ systems that have led to a different presentation of their long COVID versus someone who had a very mild illness, barely felt their acute infection, but then went on to develop long COVID symptoms. So I do think it tends to be a little bit too early to sort of identify specific differences in symptom presentation. There's a lot of variables that we still need to uncover. And it's also very hard to run these studies when we can't even speak to the quality of healthcare that people are receiving, depending on where they're coming from. So what are the questions that physicians are asking a person of color versus a person, a white affluent person? These questions will differ. You know, we know, for instance, from many studies into medical bias that a physician is less likely to ask a person of color about pain. So that might lead to reporting that individuals of color who have long COVID are less likely to report pain. Well, they still have pain. They just weren't asked about it, you know? So it's a very tricky issue to unpick, and it's something that I think we need to spend a little bit more time studying before we make any definitive statements.
Well, I think that's a wonderful segue into my next question, which is, given the structural racism and well-known inequities in the U.S. healthcare system, coupled with challenges patients with long COVID already face in terms of diagnosis and treatment, how can we ensure that minority patients receive the care they need, including the diagnosis? And are we seeing a greater amount of underdiagnosis in these populations?
Yeah, I would say that, nothing short of a coordinated government response to build free long COVID clinics in communities where people are living at or below the poverty line is crucial. When we talk about long COVID patients, there's many papers that have been published now that sort of will paint the picture of the average long COVID patient that enters a long COVID clinic, and our clinic is certainly no different. Being a white lady in her mid to late 30s is the sort of average figure of long COVID. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that that is an access issue. That is not a real epidemiological stat. And what I find, interesting about that is most of the individuals that seek care are sort of, middle upper class in terms of income, and they're still not being believed. So these people are being told it's in their head, right? So these are people who are outraged because they're used to being believed when they walk into a doctor's office or they walk into any sort of room and speak. They are used to, because of the inherent privileges they've had up until this point, they're used to being told, okay, well, we believe you, let's look into this and let's see what we can do. And yet, the latest paper that I read said over 85% of long COVID patients that enter a long COVID clinic have been gaslit or told that it is psychosomatic prior to receiving care in a specialty long COVID clinic. So if you just think about that statistic, and you think about the fact that most of these individuals are socially and culturally from a background where they're used to being believed, they're used to being able to access good care at their fingertips, you can only imagine how terrible the medical bias is going to be for individuals who are at a baseline used to not being believed, used to being discriminated against, and all of the literature that we have about medical bias tells us that they're already going to be starting at a point of disadvantage. It's a dire situation, and that's why we need immediate government action on this front.
So I have a feeling you don't really have an answer to this next question, but let's see. So what can our listeners who are clinicians do about this in terms of ensuring that patients of color and economic disparities receive the care they need? What should they be aware of then?
I mean, we need all clinicians in the country right now to rapidly upskill themselves in long COVID and identifying long COVID. And this is why a big part of what we're working on right now is, in fact, focusing on long COVID education for clinicians as well as for patients. So one of the things that I think is very important at this point is for clinicians themselves to take it upon themselves to be asking their patients about long COVID symptoms. Because I think that in a lot of, historically excluded groups in healthcare, in these communities, they're not openly talking about their symptoms because, you know, from their perspective, it's just like, well, what am I going to say? I'm feeling tired since I got COVID. Who's going to believe me? Who's going to care about that? What we need are skilled COVID-conscious clinicians asking those questions. I noticed that you had COVID, 4 weeks ago. Have you fully recovered? And then after they invariably say yes, because everyone wants to say yes to the question, are you fully recovered? You then start to ask, are you feeling more fatigued than usual? Do you experience post-exertional malaise, meaning after you exert yourself, do you crash? And really starting to tease these questions, tease these answers out of people who are historically taught to hold it all in and not comment on the symptoms that they're experiencing, because I think that that's the only way that these folks are going to get the care that they need.
I think that is wonderful advice, a great clinical pearls. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today. So I want to thank you so much for this very insightful conversation. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us. We have another episode in this series with Dr. Petrino, so stay tuned and make sure you listen to that one as well. This podcast was brought to you by Med Learning Group. Med Learning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide CME for physicians. This activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I want to give a special thanks to Pfizer, which provided an educational grant for this activity.